Thanks for listening to this message from the life of St. Bees. We're a church that loves to empower, equip, and inspire. And in order to better fulfill this call, we're currently undertaking an audacious church relocation project. Find out more, including how you can take part, at www.goandgrow.london. Thank you, and may this message better help you to live a life full of adventurous faith.
It's nice to see you all. It was great getting the little English cafe plug. And I was just thinking back to when I was involved in English Cafe and really enjoyed it. And I remember chatting to a couple of Russian women who were there. And we were talking about culture shock. And I was asking them, what have been some of the things that you found challenging about being in London? And I was kind of expecting them to sort of talk about, you know, rent prices or whatever. But they were like, oh, English women. I was like, oh, okay. Anything in particular? And there was one thing that they had real beef with. They were like, it's the way they do their makeup on the tube. They're just sitting there on the tube. They get their phone out and use it like it's some kind of mirror, and they're putting their makeup on. And they were like, you cannot do that. A woman needs to have the allure. And that happens, you know, in the privacy of her own home before she comes out. That just stuck with me because I thought, you know, that wouldn't have been my first thing to choose. But anyway, it was for them. So I wonder what your morning routine is like. I wonder how you prepare in the morning, what you do to kind of look beautiful or whatever. For me, I have to say, it depends on the day, particularly on how rushed I am. I don't do a great deal. But I do dress up more sometimes than others. So like today, I'm making sure I'm looking relatively respectable because I'm preaching. And we actually have a preaching code. I think I'm meant to be wearing a jacket because apparently that looks good. But anyway, it was raining and I cycled here, so sorry. But there are times when I think I can scrub up all right. So like my sister got married this summer, which is great. And I went to her wedding, and I put on a suit. And when I got ordained, I had to wear this little Miss World sash thing across one side. It's all very weird. But I wouldn't wear necessarily those kind of clothes on a Monday morning. Maybe you do. Why is this relevant? Well, we're going to be looking at a passage of Scripture in a minute. It's from the book of Hebrews, and we don't know who wrote it. So we're not sure who wrote the book of Hebrews, but clearly he or she really knew their stuff. They particularly understood the whole history of the Jewish law. And what they do in this passage is they completely invert what people would have assumed or known at the time. So back in the day, in kind of old Judaism time, when Jesus was around and before, there would be a high priest who would get to go into the presence of God. Ordinary people, no. Women, absolutely not. Non-Jews, no. You had to be a Levite, so you had to be from one tribe, and you had to be the high priest, you had to be male, you had to be without any physical defect, and even that wasn't enough. So in order to enter God's presence, the way that the high priest would start his routine would be early in the morning. He would bathe in running water. Had to be running water, not still. He'd put on a bejeweled priestly garment, which would only be worn for that day. He'd underneath that be wearing some spotless white linen clothes, which would be changed several times because throughout the day, there'd be moments when he'd be sacrificing animals and, you know, blood gets all over the place and stuff. So each time that would happen, he'd have to go and bathe again and have a change of clothing. He would even pay for a bullock. So he'd buy a bullock and he'd out of his own pocket and he'd sacrifice it in order to cleanse his sins and the sins of his household. It was a really big deal to enter into the presence of God. It didn't happen very often, and when it happened, there were all these rules that you had to follow. there are even people who say that the high priest would have a rope tied around their leg so that if they happen to have a heart attack or something whilst they're in the Holy of Holies, they can be pulled back out without someone having to actually go in who hasn't gone through all the kind of ritual to be cleansed. And yet the passage we're about to read just inverts all of that. And what I'd like us to do is to read it together. I think Colin did that last week in the morning services, and I thought it was great. So are you ready? Here we go. 1, 2, 3. Therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way open for us through the curtain, that is his body, and since we have a great high priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from our healthy conscience and having our bodies washed with pure water. Yep, that is one sentence. I'm not sure if that would pass teacher muster in an exam. So what's that telling us? Well, for a start, it's saying that what was once only for that high priest is now for everybody. So that curtain that used to divide the Holy of Holies from the great masses has been torn. And when Jesus died on the cross, the curtain was torn from top to bottom. That's not something that humans can do. Like, if you were tearing it, it would be torn from bottom to top. Interesting. Going back to that, we're told that Jesus, and by his blood, us, we now have right, we have access into God's presence. We can draw near with confidence, not just timidly, like, oh, it's all right, hello, Lord. Like, we're allowed to come into his presence. Something that used to be just for one person, like once or twice a year, we all get to do that today. You don't seem that thrilled by that, but honestly, it's amazing. When I was studying theology at Wycliffe Hall in Oxford, I got given a bod card. And a bod card is a library card that will get you into the Bodleian Library. Again, you may not think that's particularly cool, but honestly, look at it. This is the Radcliffe camera. And I remember a friend of mine saying, just walking in there makes me feel cleverer. And it really does. And the Bodleian Library, one of the oldest and greatest libraries in the world, is all around it. And you've seen it, actually. They used it in the Harry Potter films, for example. I used to love just getting on my bike, going down to the Radcliffe Camp with my laptop, and getting out my book card and walking in. And all these tourists, they're all papping away, but they're not allowed in because they haven't got one of those cards. They can go into certain parts of the library where they've got to pay. I didn't have to pay anything. It's great. I could even sneak in some of my friends. I think my record was one of my black female friends getting in on my ID. So they don't really look. It's such a nice thing to be able to go in for free. Now, here's another thing, and Roz over there is going to hate me for saying this, but did you know that because our church is part of the Diocese of London, we actually have 4 parish passes which you are allowed to borrow. You've got to return them, which means that we have free access to St. Paul's Cathedral. So if you wanted to, you could go to St. Paul's Cathedral, and whilst everyone else is queuing up, you just waltz through the fast lane. You don't pay the £18 that everyone else is paying per person. You just get in there, and it's amazing. And I love taking people there. One of my favourite meeting places because it makes me feel generous, but it doesn't cost me anything. you go up to the Whispering Gallery, and then you go up to the right up to the top, and you get incredible views of London, and it's free. Free passes are brilliant. There is a danger with them, though. And that danger is that they can lead to complacency. I was telling you about my morning routine. I mean, this morning, I had a shower. So it was great. I was able to just strip off in a nice, warm, heated bathroom. Then I got in, decided, actually, no, my housemates left it at a temperature I think I want it a bit warmer. Turned on the tap, and off we went. I didn't have to worry about how much hot water, whether we'd run out, whether there'd be a power cut. But I tell you, that's not always been the case. When I lived in Kyrgyzstan, I lived in a small village in the mountains. And then, if I wanted to have a shower, the first thing I had to do was I went down to the spring, just near to the stream in the land that I lived in. So I lived with a local family who had a little kind of farm. And I'd fill up my bucket from the stream that gurgled out of the roots of this old tree. And then I'd bring it back and go into the bathroom that had been a little bit of an afterthought for my host family. It was just a concrete room. There was a window, kind of a small little window up there, but with no glass in it. And in winter, you know, it was very cold. So I'd strip off, and I'd stand on this little wooden platform thing, and I'd grab my dipper, and I would then just have to like count, like, come on, you can do this, Chris. 1, 2, 3. And then I'd start dousing myself, and I tell you, it was brisk. And if I wanted to have a proper kind of shower, like really get properly clean, then me and my teammates, we would spend a little while chopping wood, and where our office was, our landlord had a kind of wood-burning sauna type of thing, and we'd have to feed that in. It was a big rigmarole. And I really learned the value of water. Like, I became really economical in how much water I would use when I would be washing up, because I'd have to go and get it and bring it back by buckets. If I wanted it to be warm, I'd have to heat it up, and it took forever. But now, I just step in, and I just enjoy. And I wonder sometimes whether we have become a little bit complacent as well. I don't know if any of you actually thought as you came in today, is someone watching me? Is there someone who's making a list that my name might be on? Am I going to have someone turn up at my work tomorrow and take me off for interrogation? I don't know when you were coming in here today whether you had to worry about stuff like that. But many people do. For many people, following Jesus really costs something. Let's have a look at this little video now. This is just a clip that was filmed on someone's phone in China, filmed by a missionary who had managed to smuggle in a suitcase full of Bibles. And let's just see the reactions. Did you notice the silence? Like they were just like, I've got a Bible. Like I've memorized so much of this book before. Maybe I've been given torn pages from someone else that I've had to hide. Like now I've got the whole thing. Whereas for us, it's like, oh, Amazon, I don't know which translation I want. I don't know which version. Oh, do I want a black cover? Or oh, you know, it's very easy for us to lose a sense of value because we have something so easily. I think we can often be a bit more like the couple in this next clip.
All right, Sunday morning, we got to find a church to go to.
It should be easy. There are a bunch when we were driving.
Seems like there was one on every block. It can't be that hard, right?
They're everywhere. Hold on.
We're still in the parking lot.
You know I worry.
Okay, here's one up here. Listen, Church of Jesus Christ. That's us.
Of Latter-day Saints.
Okay, no.
Can't do that.
Okay, here we go, right here.
Oh, I love the funny church signs. What's that say?
What is it? Choose the bread of life or your toast.
No. Oh. I'm gluten-free. I can't go there.
Okay.
Is that Echo Church?
The churches with the nightclub names, I don't love those.
Plus, we're a new creation, and we both came out of that lifestyle.
Yes.
Raise them, raise them. Okay, what about that one? United Pentecostal Church.
Okay, well, you're not getting in there. You're wearing pants, so for sure, no.
Oh, I forgot my long denim skirt. You're right.
Plus, you're wearing too much makeup.
What?
No, for the denomination. They got a thing about women and makeup
and
stuff.
I don't think they do.
No, you look great. I'm just saying it's not just for there.
Yeah. Should stop talking. Oh, is that Iglesia de Cristo?
Really? With the accent? Let's not do this.
I've been using Rosetta Stone.
You don't speak Spanish. We're not going to a Spanish-speaking church.
I kind of speak Spanish.
You don't.
Well, I like traditional. I like neutrals.
Got it. Yep.
I don't want something too progressive.
Sure.
I don't like steeples, but I also don't like strip malls.
Okay, so like something in the middle.
Okay, potential church?
Yeah, maybe next year.
Okay.
You didn't get the joke.
It's not funny.
All right, here we go. Barnabas Anglican Church. Anglican? Can we
do
that?
And it looks like they have a female pastor. Really?
No, I'm just saying I'd rather not.
Do you want to sleep on the couch tonight?
Babe, this is way harder than I thought, honestly.
I know. We're in a city. There's got to be an Andy Stanley satellite church somewhere.
I mean, right? If not, there's probably one coming soon.
I'm sure they've already got a building fund.
Wow.
Okay, Ebenezer Baptist Tabernacle.
Is that a black church?
What?
I'm just saying you wouldn't last in there. All the dancing and moving. Ebenezer Baptist Tabernacle. You can't even clap on rhythm at the white church, okay?
I watched The Potter's House, first of all. Second of all, I love T.D. Jakes and I follow his daughter on Instagram.
Okay.
Oh, what about Kingdom Hall of Jehovah's Witnesses?
I don't know how it works there with visitors. Can we just walk in or do we have to knock first?
That was dumb.
Come on, that's hilarious!
Cathedral of St. Peter?
I don't know. Is that Catholic?
I don't know. How can you tell?
I don't know. With the Catholic Church, you always need to look for the keywords. Saint, perpetual, sacred heart. Anything Guadalupe related, if we're not in Mexico, for me is a no-go.
But what about like a mega church?
I don't want like a mega church. I'm out on any church that has like cops directing
traffic. Okay, two hands on the wheel, please.
It has cops directing traffic. I'm out. It's going to take forever to get to lunch.
Okay, you're right.
All right, here we go. Look, New Hope Church of God. We can do that, right?
Church of God. Is that the one with the new instruments?
I think, is that Church of Christ?
Oh, no, it's Church of Christ. I grew up Church of Christ. We couldn't even wear tank tops. No thanks.
Okay, good. Great voices, though. Great acapella.
I'd still rather. Oh, Jericho's House of Praise.
What, are we just going to drive around it 7 times? Maybe then we'll decide.
What?
It's a joke.
I don't get it.
Well, read your Bible.
Okay, what about this tabernacle?
Okay, as a general rule, tabernacles, cathedrals, temples, synagogues are all out.
At least a synagogue would have a yarmulke to put on that hair.
Okay.
Oh, here we go. Is that Hillsong?
Thank you. Lead me to the cross.
Perfect.
This is perfect. Let's go. Oh, babe, we're on vacation. I didn't bring my skinny jeans. We can't go to Hillsong.
Yeah, but those have holes in them. They look fine.
What? No.
Definitely can't wear that Tommy Hilfiger shirt. What do you have on underneath
that?
That's
I wear it to the office. No. I don't know, like a V-neck or
something.
Oh,
yeah.
Like
just wear the V-neck and put these on.
These glasses? They didn't have lenses
Trust
in them.
Trust me.
Why?
Yeah, you look like Carl Lentz.
What? Okay.
Today.
Okay, you know what? Not going here.
Well, he's an attractive man.
We're going to brunch.
So, there's quite a lot of truth in that, isn't there? I think we have a tendency to become a bit consumer, particularly somewhere like London. We've got so many choices. And if you fall out with someone here, you can go to there. If you fall out with someone there, or you don't like that, you can go somewhere else. There are loads of good churches. I think often we end up looking at what we can get out of church and not necessarily ways that we can contribute. I wonder sometimes if we feel that God should just be grateful that, you know, I turned up at all. Hey, I could be doing something else right now. It's a rainy Sunday afternoon. Endless possibilities. In fact, why bother with church at all? I think some of the times where I've experienced God's presence the most have been when I've been hiking, just on my own in nature. It's been great. And these days, like, you don't need to come here and listen to me. You know, you can listen to Tim Keller. Get a podcast of him. He's amazing. You know, why come here when you can listen to a world-class Bible teacher? And equally, you know, our worship band's great, but you can listen to some big mashup of Bethel and Hillsong doing their huge big thing. Why bother with church at all? Why not just make Sundays a nice long lie-in? And also, churches fail. They're full of sinners. They're full of people we don't like. They wind us up in different ways. Wouldn't it just be easier to just not bother with church at all? Let's read the second part of our passage. Oh, sorry. Let us hold. Oh, actually, let's do it together. Can we do that? All right, here we go. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. Beautifully read, thank you. So first off, I think meeting together regularly helps build our faith. I've got a rowing machine, and I used to row when I was studying at Oxford. I still kind of, you know, go for it on my rowing machine, but I don't, not really. Like, I don't get the same results that I used to get, because it used to be that there was more of a sense of purpose for it, but also there'd be a group of us, and we'd all be erging, that's what they call it when you're on a rowing machine, we'd all be erging at the same time, and we'd have our cox, and we'd have our coach yelling at us, sometimes swearing at us. And I remember one time when I thought I was about to vomit, I just stopped for a moment and my coach just went, woof, like kicked me in the back. It's on a moving thing, and got me going again. It was great. I got a decent score that I just wouldn't have got on my own. So there's something here, going back to this. Go back one. Yeah, there we go. This concept of unswervingly, rather than just a gentle meander along, yeah, a bit of this, bit of that, there's a sense of purpose that can happen when we meet with other Christians. There's a synergy that can happen there. You may have heard me say this before, it doesn't take many nature documentaries to watch until you get to see how predators work. And we're told in Scripture that that the devil is like a prowling lion looking for people to devour. And the way that lions work is you just isolate from the herd and then you bring down. That's how you do it. So let's not let ourselves get isolated. There's something strong about meeting with other Christians and doing that on a regular basis, not an annual one. In verse 24, we read, "And let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds." Love and good deeds. That doesn't happen if you're just kind of going solo. You know, let's not be a lone ranger. For example, do you know how many hot home-cooked meals we provide every year for our homeless and vulnerable guests that come on Sunday lunches? Anyone want to hazard a guess?
3,000.
Yeah, it's about 3,000. Well, it's probably over because there's a lot of people having seconds. 3,000 meals are being provided. If one person decided, this is going to be my vision, I'm going to make it happen, they couldn't do that. It's only possible when we've got a group of people, ordinary people, doing extraordinary things together. What about English classes? Did you know that we provide English classes here for people within the community who don't speak English as a first language, and often when they come to the UK or to London feel really isolated and lonely and find it really hard? Any idea how many we give? What's that? It's over 800. So over 800 classes at different levels are being done. Keith, who is leading our intercessions, is one of the people who's basically spearheading that. We've got ordinary people who said, I want to be involved in this. Like, I want to do something. So Pete, why did Pete Grant start English Cafe? He started it because he said, like, talking to my grandma, who's Italian, when she came here, she didn't know anybody. She found it so, so difficult. She found London such an unfriendly place, and not much has changed. So, like, I just want to make a difference. I want to do something that will be different. And that will mean that not everyone has that experience. I wonder how familiar you are with the parable of the sheep and the goats. Yeah, have you heard of that? It's not actually a parable. It's a genuine story. As in, it's a genuine, this is what Jesus is saying about the future. Here's what he says. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another, as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He'll put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. You see, I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." And then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?" And the king will reply, "Truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it for me." So on Sunday mornings, we've got worship services at 8:30, 9:30, and 11:30. And they're great, and I think God's really honored by them. But also, I think Jesus really enjoys being fed at lunchtime as well and being clothed. We've got a clothes bank, by the way, especially if you're a man or have access to someone else's wardrobe who is a man. We'd love to collect more men's clothing in particular. Be involved in clothing Jesus. When the prison outreach hub meets together and plans out trips to the prison to lead worship services and stuff, Jesus is honored. When English classes happen to people who are strangers in this city, Jesus is welcomed. And you can be part of that. That's what church is. That's what happens when people gather together. On Tuesday, we were talking at Jesus the Game Changer, this course that we're running at the moment over there in the cafe area. We watched an episode that looks at Jesus and women, looking at the way that Jesus honored and esteemed women and the way that that leaked through into the early church. So back then, if you were a woman in first century Palestine, you know, you didn't have rights. Your testimony wasn't even valid in a court of law. And the Greco-Roman world was pretty rubbish as well for women. If you gave birth to a daughter, you're like, "Oh, not another one." So what do? Well, you just chuck her out on the trash. If someone wants her, they can take her. Or you put her out in the wilderness, and who knows, she might get eaten by wild animals, but maybe someone will want her. And that was common practice. And one of the ways that the early church really grew was by collecting baby girls from the trash heaps and from places where they'd just been left to die, and raising them and loving them and esteeming them and valuing them. So we talked about that, and I was like, "Yeah, that's great. But what about today? There are more people today being sold into slavery, particularly women being trafficked as forced sex workers. What could we be doing today?" And the discussion carried on, and there were a couple of women who were saying, "You know, like this whole life hub thing that we're trying to start, wouldn't it be great if we could do a life hub meeting in McDonald's? Because like that seems to be where a lot of the sex workers who work here in our area, that's where they tend to be. And wouldn't it be great if we could like see if we could get to know some of them and just love them and, you know, buy them a coffee and pray for them if they want that?" This kind of thing doesn't happen unless we meet together. It's in the meeting that vision starts to bubble up. So what does our passage actually say? It says, "Do not give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing." So this idea of kind of church, not really feeling it today. It's raining outside, and I've got some serious box sets I need to catch up on. It's not actually a new concept. So the writer of Hebrews says, "Do not give up meeting together regularly, as some are in the habit of doing." It's been like that since the time of the early church, actually. And you can choose who you want to be. But don't miss out. Don't isolate yourself from others. We live in an era of rampant individualism. But the flip side of that is that we also live in an era of rampant loneliness, especially here in London. So be part of a community and start thinking, what's the part that I need to play in bringing Jesus to people and bringing people to Jesus? How can I be his hands and his feet? Before we finish, I'd like you just to turn to someone nearby you. Please look around, make sure no one's left on their own. And just say, look, here are some of the ways that I'm involved in church now, but also here are some of the ways that I'm feeling challenged, like I'd like to get involved a bit more. Because it's really easy to be hearers of the word, but let's be doers of it as well.